in Minneapolis with the Secretary of the Treasury, Scott Bessin. Welcome to Minnesota.
Good to be back.
What brings you to the state that is in the news for many things, from fraud to unrest on the streets to a flailing economy and all kinds of things with deficits and just a big mess economically?
Well, I'm here to bring the Trump economic message here today at the Economic Club of Minneapolis, which I'm looking forward to. Evidently, it's sold out. People want to hear what the message is that and how Minnesota can get on board, right the ship. That, you know, I've been coming out to Minnesota for decades and used to own businesses here. And I'm not sure what happened to the state, what went wrong. But so that's one of the reasons I'm here. And then the other is to investigate this massive waste, fraud, and abuse of the system that's been going on that's just mind-boggling. And it's all levels. It's the actual fraud, but then how are our financial institutions intertwined with this, with the immigrant community? Is it larger than the immigrant communities? How does it move into the political sphere? I think we just saw with the audit in St. Paul yesterday that records were being changed. A lot of people doing CYA, and you know, there's real criminality there. And then to see how and the when money's been leaving the country.
Let's talk a little bit about 2025. Obviously, you inherited quite a inflation mess and a growth problem and all of that. A lot to fix in a short period of time, but we're about a year in now. Quick report card on 2025, especially on things you think have not gotten the attention they should on the economy.
Yeah, so look, president is in Trump time. He's on 11 all the time. We try to keep up with him. He has been very aggressive on the economic agenda. I think we inherited what I call the three I's: inflation, interest rates, and immigration. Immigration. They said border couldn't be closed without legislation. Guess what? It's closed. It's safe. It's sound. We've seen about 2.5 million deportations. Big number of those self-deportation. Those are people who came here illegally, would like to be able to come back. And by leaving, they can if they come back in the right way. Interest rates were out of control. Fed has brought them down about 75 basis points. U.S. had the best performing bond market in the G7, best performing performance by the bond market in 2020. And I think a big part of that is because we actually narrowed the fiscal deficit. And I'll come back to that. And, I think we have really set the table, but I think a couple of things that didn't get the attention they deserve. We did bring down the deficit. So for the fiscal year, which ends September 30th, we had a small reduction in the deficit. It was estimated to be $2 trillion. Year before had been about $1.8 trillion. We were $1.77, $1.78, but a small contraction on the calendar year. We're going to be down several hundred billion, so maybe 1% of GDP or more. So we are bringing down the deficit. You know, the deficit was caused a lot of the third eye, which was inflation, you know, this rampant Biden inflation, and we've been bringing down costs. Energy cost, one of the biggest components. Mortgage rates are down about 100 basis points. And I think in the trade deals, and we saw it with the trade deficit today, the lowest since 2009, is because exports are up. And I think the underreported story in the trade deals, you know, you read about the U.S. tariffs, you read about the other things. The other side of the trade deal is President Trump, USTR Ambassador Jameson Greer have been tough on our trading partners. So we have put on tariffs. We've made them push their tariffs down to zero. We make them take down non-tariff trade barriers. So the U.S. export machine is getting fired up again, something that I haven't seen since I began my career on Wall Street in the 1980s. And then I think the other big component, President Trump's economic agenda is a three-legged stool: the trade, tax, and deregulation. And you know, trade's gotten a lot of publicity. One Big Beautiful Bill done July 4th, and we'll come back to that. And then the deregulation is going to be the unsung hero of the economy. That the president, we are taking out 10, 20, 30 regulations for every new regulation. And we are from small banks to industrial companies to energy security, energy companies, all across the economy, we're making it easier to build, maintain a business.
And obviously most of that impact is going to be in 2026. There was a ton packed into the one big beautiful bill. Give me some high level points on what you think are going to have the most impact the soonest.
Well, the soonest is, and I'll give you the a headline tip. Today at the Economic Club, we're going to announce one of the earliest openings of tax season in history. So January 26th, tax season's going to open. We are going to see what is likely record refunds to working families because the one big beautiful bill was passed July 4th. We did not, because I'm also the IRS commissioner, we did not give employers new withholding schedules. So, and it's retroactive throughout the year. So we're going to see very large tax refunds due to the president's signature policies, no tax on tips, no tax on overtime, no tax on Social Security, deductibility of American-made autos. So the refund season in the first quarter is going to be big. Working Americans will change their withholding schedule, and they will get a weekly, monthly boost up in their real incomes. And that's how we're going to tackle this terrible affordability crisis that Biden left us with. We are holding down cost, and then we're going to bring up real income.
Tell me quickly about the Trump accounts for newborn babies. I think that hasn't gotten a lot of attention, but long term, could be some major impacts there.
It's going to get a lot of attention. All your viewers watch the Super Bowl right after the national anthem. We're going to have a big rollout, and these are incredible. I think President Trump, in my view, saved our country when he came in this year, but I think his legacy is really going to be these Trump accounts in 20, 30, 40, 50 years, that what we are doing for the term of his presidency, every newborn child is going to get $1,000 that will be invested in the American stock market. So right now, Scott, 38% of Americans have no stake in the stock market. You know, everybody else may be directly through stocks, through 401k, through some other employee pension. Now, I think we can get everyone invested in the system. Everyone will get to participate in the great innovation, economic machine that is the United States. And so that $1,000 is going to come from the government. But then either parents can top it up, parents, friends, employers can top it up to $5,000. And I'm going to challenge the folks at the Economic Club in Minneapolis today. Employers can top it up. You can do something for all of your employees. You can adopt a city. You can adopt a zip code. You can adopt a school district. So I think we're going to go well beyond the $1,000. And the power of compounding here, when an ordinary person gets to be 65, they could have $500,000. So you'll have the two building blocks for a great retirement. You'll have Social Security, which is a monthly, the stabilized payment, defined benefit plan, and then you will get this payout of a nest egg, and it'll be like nothing we've seen before.
Let's talk a little bit about two areas we spent a lot of time talking about on my radio show and from listeners, and that's the ag economy and then also small businesses. On the ag side, obviously, it's been years and years and years of tough stuff. Cost of production well below what they're, well above what they're getting, and it's just going backwards every year. And now, obviously, there's bumps from the trade thing. The one hope you hear a lot about is some tax policy that's a little wonky that has helped them, 45Q and Z. I know those discussions are being on. You anticipate those continuing to the degree they are? And what would you say for farmers that are really worried about the trade deal, especially China on soybeans?
So if we work backwards there, Scott, that we have reinforced with the Chinese counterparts that with President Trump, the farmers love President Trump. President Trump loves his farmers. And every time I'm on every phone call with Party Chair Xi, so every time President Trump speaks to him, he pushes him to make sure that he is living up to his purchase agreements. So this year, 12.5 million metric tons. Every year for the next 3 years, 25 million tons a year. I think that we are about 80% done with this season in terms of their buying. And look, costs are up. in terms of the planting season. But the other thing that's happened is this was a bountiful harvest. This was, for better or worse, this was a great crop year.
It's why a lot of people are looking to keep more of that crop at home, more of the processing, more value added, and that's where 45Z and Q come in.
Yeah, exactly. So we are trying to break our dependence on these export markets. As you may know, I was involved in farming. My family's been in the farming.
In North Dakota, too, I believe.
In North Dakota, but my family's been in the farming business since 1670s in South Carolina. And what I can tell you is I think there's a very good chance that the Chinese may come begging us for more soybeans next year, because we are seeing what may be the beginning of the La Nina weather pattern in the summer southern hemisphere, which would mean that the Brazilian, the Argentinian soybeans might get scorched. So if I were still in the farming business, I would not hedge my beans for next year.
And just quickly before we go to small business, anything on the biofuels front that you can say on that? Tax policy?
We'll be out with the ruling. We've submitted it to OIRA, who has to review everything. And in the coming weeks, we'll be out with the 45Z ruling. But I think it's going to be very favorable.
Good. On small businesses, same thing, especially interest rates, right, and inflation hammering them big time. I've heard some folks talk about some sort of rescue package, might be the wrong word, but not unlike what's being done with farmers for small businesses. I know there's packed into that one big beautiful bill a lot, but is there any thought of like hyper-focusing on the small businesses?
Well, what we're trying to do is I've been hyper-focused on Main Street versus Wall Street, and I called it parallel prosperity, because we saw Wall Street for years has done great. Main Street got left behind, and I'm from the financial services industry, and I think one of the reasons for that, and as Treasury Secretary, it's something that I can control, is that since the great financial crisis, we have seen small and community banks, 50% of them disappear. And they are the engine for Main Street. So I am the chair of something called the Federal Supervisory Oversight Council, or the Financial Supervisory Oversight Council. And we have been pushing back on regulations that have hurt small banks. So we have tried to make it easier for them to make safe and sound loans, to work for their communities. We're taking down regulation. We're taking down AML requirements. Who knows their clients better than small banks? So I think that the amount of credit that's going to be available for small business in 2026 is going to be off the charts.
And of course, that interest rate has to come down. I know Moody's is saying 3 early in the year. Do you agree with that?
What I believe is that the Federal Reserve is still in restrictive territory. There's this idea of, the neutral rate is what doesn't change the economy. The restrictive rate bites, pulls the economy down. The stimulative rate accelerates the economy. And I think the Fed should just get to neutral. And I think around 3%, 2.5-3% is probably where most models would say the neutral rate is.
And should land there by when? You think the first half of the year you get that?
Scott, the 40 years on Wall Street.
I know what you're going to say.
You can pick a level, but never give the time.
Yeah, exactly. Last question. You're here, too, to focus on fraud. Yes. Specifically to your role as a Treasury Secretary, what will your focus be, what you want to leave here with in the way of more scrutiny on what's happening here? And by the way, California, other places, the numbers are as big or bigger than here. And some estimates by the U.S. attorney here, $9 billion in fraud.
$9 billion would be 50%, 50 of the $18 billion that was allocated here. So it's unbelievable. So we're here. And again, I'm the acting IRS commissioner. And I want to commend, there's a division at IRS called Criminal Investigations, these hardworking men and women. And they're kind of cool cats, because they are financial accountants, who also go out in the field. They carry guns and they do enforcement. And they're the ones who broke this, the Minnesota scandal. So IRS led the way, and we are going to continue doing that. But I'm bringing in Treasury because there is something rotten here in the financial system, in the banking system, in these money service businesses where money is being wired out of the country. We are working on an executive order that will say, if you are on public assistance, you cannot wire the money out of the country. If the American people are the most generous people in the world, and that is, that money is for you and your family. It is not for the people you left behind in Mogadishu. It is not to fund the some terrorist organization over there. And if you've got extra money to wire out of town, then you're getting too much of it, and maybe you committed fraud.
Do you anticipate public officials being held accountable criminally?
Look, who knows where this could go? I was the not shocked to see that with the hearings or with this audit group in St. Paul who came out and said that public officials are trying to backdate, they're trying to erase files, they're trying to cover their tracks. And you know, as we know, the cover-up can be worse. So you know, we're going to start there, but we are going to do this from top to bottom. We're going to figure out how it happened here, and then we are going to use the investigations here to take that model to every other state. Because as you said, just because of the size of California, Illinois, New York, that the dollars are gigantic. And Scott, their GAO, General Accounting Office, believes that we could be losing between 300, 500, 600 billion a year to fraud. So that's 10% of the federal budget, 1-2% of GDP. President Trump just came out yesterday and said he'd like to increase the defense budget by $500 billion to counter what's going on in the rest of the world. Well, guess what? We wouldn't have to borrow any money. We wouldn't have to raise taxes if we can recover all these fraudulent funds.
Mr. Secretary, thank you for coming. Keep up the great work.
Good to see you.
Our best to the president.
Yep. He's working hard every day and every night.